Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Tony and I just got back from New Orleans at FinCon, where we were there for, I don't know, 3 or 4 days.
Felt like a month.
It always feels like a long time.
Yeah.
Although I had to take off a little earlier because I had to wake up the next morning at around 5 o'clock so I could drive my son to a volleyball tournament that lasted all day.
Good times, good times. I left before the closing party. However, I stayed for most of Saturday as well, which I'm glad I did. There was a couple good sessions I hit on Saturday.
Right. And I want to talk about those sessions because you kind of teased them to me over text.
There were so many key takeaways. Let's talk about what really happened. I'm in sessions and you're texting me. What are you learning? I was like, I'm in a session. I can't talk to you right now.
I didn't know you were actually in the session. Shouldn't you be paying attention?
Yes, I couldn't because somebody was texting me. So what was interesting about this, and it's funny because we talked last week about like the conference experience and things like that. And one of the things we both said was we don't usually attend a lot of sessions. And I actually attended a lot of sessions this year, and I thought they were all really, really good.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And actually, if you're in the course, I'm actually doing a FinCon YouTube recap in the course because I got some tips that I actually thought were, if you've heard them before, but I thought that they were just so like important that I thought, you know, these are things that actually people really need to think about when they're creating video. And as FinCon showed me and you, as well as every other thing we've done, video is just where it's at right now. You have to be creating video.
I think so. I'm a little hesitant to use the word have to because, you know, at FinCon is where I meet up with my mastermind buddies and more than half of them are not doing video mm-hmm. at all and they're still kicking butt. But I agree with you. That's where the world's going.
Yes. A lot of your buddies at FinCon aren't creating video, but they've also been blogging for 20 years. And so
has it been that long?
I mean, pretty much, right? If you think
10 years.
If you think about Jim. 10. I mean, when did Jim start bargaineering? 2004, 2005, 2006? It's a long time.
I want to say he started in 2007.
Yeah, but like JD started Get Rich Slowly in 2004. Like some of these people have been blogging for a very long time, which does make a difference in your business and what's going on. Just like for you and I, like we've been blogging a long time. We have an advantage because we have so much content.
That's correct. But I mean, you need a lot of content on YouTube also.
Yes.
But, you know, we're on the same page. I totally agree with you. I think you have to be doing video today.
You should be. It's very good. It's a very good business decision. How about that?
It's funny. I was just chatting with a good friend of ours yesterday. Mm-hmm. We chatted for about an hour. He's kind of at like a crossroads where he got hit with the last Google update. And he's like, oh, does that mean I have to do video? And I was like, well, you don't have to do anything. But I think you'd be really good at it. And, you know, it's less likely to get disrupted.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to talk first about a session that I went to that I don't think you and I have actually talked about at all. But I went to the AI panel. And
yes,
it had our friend Andrea Deckard on it. It also had Eric Rosenberg, who is a FinCon like oldie. He's been at FinCon for I think as long as I've been going at least.
He's kind of a big deal. That's his slogan.
He showed up to the panel in a gold baseball cap, a giant gold chain with dollar signs like hanging off of it, and a green like velvet glitter jacket. And Andrea was sitting next to him, and Andrea's face was amazing because Andrea was like, do not sit me next to this. Like, it's ruining my vibe. but also on the panel was the Darwinian doctor. I don't know if you follow him.
No, I don't know who that is.
He's a surgeon as well as a real estate investor, and his real estate investments have become so profitable that he's actually only a part-time surgeon now, which I don't really know what a part-time surgeon means. Like, I can only take half your appendix out today.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll have to come back next Thursday at 2 p.m. That's what I'm working. And then Pete, who is it So You Think You Can Blog? Or I'm messing
Do you know what his last name is?
I can look it up. So just you start talking while I look it up.
I mean, do I know him?
You know,
have we met?
I don't know if you have. He has a podcast out as well as a pretty popular blog. I feel like he's been around a long time. just in general. I was not familiar with him, but I will tell you, he had a voice for podcasting. Like his voice was like that nice, thick. I don't know how to describe it.
But like, you know, Joe Saul Sehy's voice?
Yes. Just like that great, I don't know. I could have listened to him all day. I was like, I need to start listening to his podcast only because I really like his voice. So let me look up his, his full name so I can tell you guys. But anyway, I had low expectations of this panel because, I don't know, you and I are not panel people.
I have low expectations of any panel.
Right. And I think part of that is because usually in a panel, one person like dominates the panel. They're usually the least educated person on the panel. And you don't usually get good answers, but I will say this panel, and it was run by Brittany Green, who did an amazing job on the panel as far as like getting answers to the questions. Pete McPherson, do you even blog?
Okay. I don't think I've met him before.
He was great. So anyway, I had low expectations because of the panel nature, not because of who was on it, but they actually hit a home run for panels. They answered things really well, got like very granular, tactical. And the one thing that I thought was really interesting is Pete has been using AI to create, he built an app using AI as well as WordPress plugins using AI. So he's not a coder. He has some like experience, but like I would say not your level, but Nassel, not like he's somewhere between me and you. But he spent 2 months this summer using like ChatGPT to code an app.
I can see that. I've done that actually too. Doesn't come out perfect, but yeah.
No, but I was like pretty impressed with that because I was like, you know, for all these people that, you know, you and I joke that you always say, you just need a little bit of code, right? And we're like, come on, Steve, not everybody can do a little bit of code. However, this guy was basically, Pete was basically saying like, even if you don't know anything about coding, you can actually get there using AI, which I thought was pretty impressive.
I 100% agree. That's how I do all my coding projects now, because I don't remember the syntax because I don't code every day. So I have ChatGPT write me the framework and then I just look through it to make sure I think it's going to work. And then I just try it and see what happens.
So
it works really well.
Yeah. So I thought that, so they gave a lot of really strategic and tactical tips, as well as one of the things that I thought was really great was at the end of the session, they had a QR code on the screen. And each of them had made a video about how they use AI in their own business, like a very tactical video that you could watch later. So I thought that was really good. The main takeaway from that one, though, I thought was, and this was from the Darwinian Dr. Daniel, he said, you don't think of AI as like cheating on a test. Think of it as like your new assistant, right? Your new like personal assistant to help you create a better business and to help you be more efficient in your business. Because it's not about just like throwing something into ChatGPT and like taking it word for word and using it. It's about using these tools to basically help your business run more efficiently and help you run more efficiently like in your business.
I 100% agree with that. You know, it's funny. I was talking with AI about AI with a number of people there. I would say half of the people are scared of it. Half the people are using it. I think the biggest fear is what's going to happen to the general population.
Yeah.
But, you know, as Paula's keynote, she used the analogy, once upon a time, there were people manually running elevators.
Yes.
And when they made them automated, everyone started freaking out. And, you know, same goes with a whole bunch of things in history.
Yeah.
Like the car disrupted the horse, all that stuff. People will just tend to adapt and new jobs will be created.
Yeah. Like, I don't think AI is going to take jobs. I think it's just going to open up an opportunity. It might remove a job, but it will also create a job. So I think it's definitely, if you are afraid of it, I would say just play around with it a little bit. Also, I haven't had a chance to check this out, but Andrea on the panel mentioned something called Sheet GPT. Have you used that? I don't even know
what it is. Google Sheets, you mean?
I don't know. Actually, I'm going to plug it in right now because I didn't get a chance to do it at the session. But
so there's a number of apps now that will just generate you spreadsheets.
Yes, it is for, you know, it is formulas. For Google Sheets. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's like, because I was saying that, I was talking to Andrea later and I said, you know, one of the ways that I've been using AI a lot is to create formulas for sheets because I don't know all the formulas for like Excel or Google Sheets, but I use them almost every day. And so being able to quickly like create the formulas I need. And now with this Sheet GPT, it sounds like you can, I was creating them in Chat GPT and then moving them over, but this looks like you can create them right in Google Sheets.
Like you can have it create like a real estate profitability spreadsheet. Just tell it and what parameters you want and that sort of thing. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So that was a huge, huge surprise and a great session. Definitely worth waking up for the 9 a.m. session. Speaking of elevators, side story. So the elevators at this hotel were the elevators where there was a bank of 6 elevators and you had to plug in your floor on like a keypad and then the screen flashed the elevator that you needed to get into. And then you waited by that elevator. The problem was it flashed it so quickly that you didn't, if you like blinked or turned your head to talk to somebody, which you were doing almost every time you got on the elevator, you didn't see which elevator you were supposed to get in. So then you're standing there wondering which of the 6 elevators you're supposed to get in. So I am on my floor and I want to get down to the lounge to have breakfast. And I'm standing there. Did I tell you this story?
No, you didn't.
So I'm standing there. I push my button. I forget what elevator I'm going to get in, but I'm also towards the top. So I'm like, well, any elevator that's picking me up is probably the elevator I need to get in, right? Because everything has to basically go down. And this other lady is standing there. And so the elevator comes and it opens. And, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, okay, is this my elevator? Like, is this where I'm supposed to be? And she looks at me and she's like, are you going to 3? And it was, I was like, no, like I wasn't prepared for the question. So I kind of stuttered and I'm also like, what does it matter where I'm going to you? I don't know. Like it wasn't a FinCon person. It was just a random lady. And I was like, no, I'm going to like 42. She's like, well, I need to go to 3. And I was like, do I look like the elevator? Like, I'm just trying to figure out where I'm supposed to go, lady. And then the doors close and she doesn't get on the elevator. And she looks at me and she is furious. Right. And I'm thinking, how is this my fault that you didn't get on the elevator? Right. And she's like, I needed to go to 3. And she's yelling at me. And I was like, oh, okay. And I like back off and I go repunch my number and then I needed to go to. And she's like, but I need 3. And I'm like, I'm not punching your number in. Right. So the elevator comes back, it opens up. I get in, she gets in. She is so mad at me that she stands in the back corner of the elevator facing the corner until I get off the elevator. I was like, she's going to kill me in this elevator. She's going to come after me. It was the weirdest thing. I was like, I thought the elevators were great because I met a ton of people in the elevator except for this woman.
I guess there's just a lot of crazy people out there.
I mean, isn't that crazy? She's like screaming at me that she didn't get on the elevator. I was like,
she probably just didn't understand how the elevators worked.
But do I look like I understand how? No, I don't. I don't. I missed my elevator too. I just wasn't like going to yell at somebody about it. So anyway,
okay, let's get back on topic, yes. Tony. I want to know about these YouTube sessions.
I know. Okay. Let me go to the next session first. So I went to a session on influencers and I mainly went to it to see what people were getting taught. Like because you know what happens, right? Is that there's like these general things that are going around in the influencer world. And then all influencers are like, I need to be paid $5,000 to make a TikTok. Right. So I wanted to see like what's being taught to influencers today. And actually, once again, panel. Pretty impressed by it, pretty impressed by the information. But, you know, and basically the message was accurate. You know, you need to be charging, but it's okay to do stuff for free if you really want the product. Like you and I have both done stuff for no charge because the product was really, really valuable to us. And, you know, also like your charge depends on not only your following, but the amount of work that you're putting into the video post, you know, social shout out, whatever it is. So really good. The thing that I thought was hilarious about this session is that during the session, one of the guys is like, well, let's go to so-and-so. He's our OG influencer. He started in 2020. And I literally snorted out loud, like in a silent room, because I was like, okay, dude, 2020, like that's, you're not an OG. Like, sorry, you're giving good information, but you can't be an OG in 2020. But overall good session. And, you know, basically influencer marketing is still a very lucrative, piece.
How much are people making? Just curious. How much are they charging?
Anywhere from $100 to $5,000, right? Like if you're doing
one TikTok,
not TikTok, but like YouTube video, things like that. Okay. I mean, that's where it depends, right? If you're just going to make one TikTok and you have, you know, a medium-sized following, probably a couple $100. However, one other thing that I did notice about this, the messaging was that, you know, if you're really niche, which I've said this for years, the more niche down you are, the more you can charge for what you're doing, right? So you might only have 10,000 followers, but all of your followers have golden retrievers. So you can charge more for something that's related to golden retrievers than if you have 100,000 followers and they're like all over the map, right? So I think that's something for people to remember, because I know we have a lot of people that are newer and they have a decent following, but it's not huge. But if it's really niche down, you can still get those deals with brands, because those actually convert better sometimes than people that have a large sort of mixed following.
It's funny. I just got a deal to do a YouTube video for $5,000. I made the mistake. They asked me how much I wanted, and I was like, I'll do it for $5,000. And they said yes without blinking. And I was like, crap.
You should have said $10,000.
I have gotten paid $10,000 for a video before, but in the form of products, not like toilet paper. $10,000 worth of toilet paper.
Yes. That's okay. You'll be great if we have another pandemic. You'll actually make $400,000 if you have that much toilet paper, because you can sell it.
but yeah, cash wise. And then for TikTok, I think the last time, I actually didn't accept this offer, but I got offered $500 to do a 45-second TikTok.
Yeah.
So it can be pretty lucrative.
The one thing that I thought was good that they, not the one thing, they said a lot of good things, but one of the things that they said that I thought was really important, and it was interesting how many people didn't raise their hand, is they asked how many people send a post campaign report to the brand, which is something that I've always done. When I ran the influencer program, we always sent post reports to the brands we worked with. But in the room, maybe 15% of the people raised their hands and said they were doing that. That's actually something that you really should do with an influencer campaign, even if it's just a quick little spreadsheet or even just in an email, right? Where you're like, how many views it got, when it was posted, comments, things like that. Because that actually, the brands really like that, and they can take that back to their bosses, right? The people that they're working for, and secure more brand money. And typically that, if they can secure more brand money and you had a successful campaign, the brand money is going to go to you. So sending that post campaign report is actually something really valuable, and it will set you apart from other influencers, because as I learned this weekend, most people aren't actually doing that.
Hmm. Yeah. I typically don't do that, but usually it's in the contract actually.
Yeah. You just don't even
they
care.
Want it. No. If it's not in the contract and they don't ask for it, usually the way they do it is they put a link in the description, mm-hmm. and that's how they track the offers, because they just want to know if there's any signups.
Yeah.
Through the video. I'm trying to think. Most of the vendors don't ask. They just want to do the link tracking, or they'll ask to put something specific in the description, mm-hmm. and that's how they measure. So. Huh, interesting. Proactively doing it. The thing is I don't really want to be the sponsored guy.
Correct. But, you know, for people, I think for people that have a very specific following on a channel, doing that sponsored content is a great way to start making money.
I 100% agree. So. I am clearly under monetizing that aspect.
Oh, yeah. You could probably double what you make based on some of the YouTube people.
More than double, because double zero is
No, double what, like take your YouTube ad revenue. You could probably double that with sponsored content if you wanted to focus on that. I know you don't want to be the sponsored content guy, but from what I heard from a lot of YouTube creators this week, they were making close to what they were getting with their ad revenue. With sponsor content.
Oh, interesting. So when I was in my YouTube mastermind, they make like many times their ad revenue with sponsored stuff, but they're doing like sponsored stuff like 4 to 8 times a month.
Yeah. Which can be a lot if you're only putting up, I mean, think about it. How many videos a week are you putting up? You don't want to have every video.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not talking about an entire video. I'm talking about like a 30-second mention.
Oh, at the beginning of the video?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or somewhere in the middle of the video that's integrated in.
Yeah.
Those pay out a lot also. It's almost like actually it's just like a podcast sponsorship.
Yeah.
In that way.
So I also went to an email, basically an email flows session.
Wait, hold on, let's not skip over that. What other tips did you get for the YouTube stuff?
Well, YouTube I was going to do last, cause I have the most tips.
Oh, last.
I went to like 4 YouTube sessions.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So I went to one on email flows, and I figured I probably wouldn't learn a lot of new things, but I'm just, you know, I was curious to see how other people are doing stuff. It was Allison. I'll have to look up her blog. But anyway, she had it was a great talk. One of the things I was impressed with at FinCon this year is so many people are great presenters. right? People that are not presenters normally, like the presentation quality from people was A+ from every session I went to. So she talked about, you know, creating funnels, and she runs an evergreen webinar, which we haven't really talked a lot about on the podcast. I know you, did you try an evergreen webinar?
You're talking about the automated one?
Yes.
Yes, I have. Yeah, it did like a small fraction of what a live one would do.
Yeah, so her evergreen webinar converts at 16%.
That's crazy.
Yes, and I think I figured out why. So I think evergreen, because you and I have both been like, don't do evergreen webinars. And Liz and I, when we started our course, she was like, we should do an evergreen webinar. I was like, absolutely not. That's the worst idea I've ever heard. But now I think I'm wrong. And here's why. I think evergreen webinars work if your product is a lower price. We have a $1,000 product. You have a $2,000 product. It is hard to, I mean, you people are coming to your webinars 6, 7, 8, 9 times before they make a purchase decision. I think if you have a $150 product or a $97 product, you can probably run an evergreen webinar and have a decent conversion rate. Now, obviously, I think her conversion rate's super high. I'm currently in her flow because I want to see how she's doing this and see how she's getting people to convert. But and it was great because she shared all of her numbers with us, which was awesome. And I think if you have a lower priced digital product, an evergreen webinar is actually something that you should probably be doing in your email flow. And when I signed up, I basically got 3 options to watch the webinar. She makes it clear it's recorded. She doesn't try to pretend like it's live, which I don't like. And it was like, you can watch it in 10 minutes, you can watch it in 6 hours, or you can watch it the next day. Like those are the 3 options. And then once you click to sign up, you get in her flow. She emails you when the webinar starts. You know, so you have the opportunity to watch, and then you get into the post webinar sales funnel. So anyway, interesting idea. I think it's definitely something that if people have a lower price product, they should at least try it, see if it works.
How much is their product?
I want to say it was under 200.
Under 200. Okay. So by low price, you mean in like the hundreds.
Yeah. Okay. I think when you hit 500 or more, the evergreen webinar is probably not going to work.
You know, what's funny is I know they do work because I had friends who were using them, but you know, what's funny is I would say in the last year or so, I used to get ads for them all the time. I have not seen a single automated webinar in my ad feed in a very long time. What about you?
I don't think I've seen any.
Yeah.
Like it's I had to find hers. So
like they all disappeared.
Yeah. I'm not sure where they went.
Whereas once upon a time, I was literally getting multiple ads for those a day.
Yeah.
So I wonder what's going on there.
I don't know. I'm wondering if people with like higher ticket items have sort of poo-pooed it. So everyone's poo-pooing it. But I think if you have a lower ticket product, an evergreen webinar doesn't hurt you to have it, I don't think.
I mean, unless you're losing money on ads, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure. If you're trying, like I'm saying just as a straight up, it's on your site as a lead magnet. I don't think it's going to hurt you if you're not running ads to it.
I know the goal, and this is from a person who is in my mastermind. The goal was to just break even on the offer for the automated webinar so that you're getting email subs essentially for free.
Yeah.
And I think it's been like over a year since I talked to him, but there was once upon a time where like the ad costs were just getting so high that it wasn't breaking even anymore. And that's why he stopped them.
Yeah.
But perhaps this person on the panel, you know, figured it out and is extremely profitable with it. Yeah. So power to her.
Last session before YouTube, I went to, it was called Accidental Entrepreneur to Successful CEO, How Systems Will Save Your Business and Your Life. A guy named Clifton Corbin, amazing speaker. He had a packed standing room only session.
Wow.
The one thing I took, I mean, he had a great talk. It was like a quick 30-minute talk. The one thing I took away from his talk, which sort of bled into everybody else's talk, was if you don't have systems set up in your business, you're going to be basically running yourself ragged. You could possibly fail. Like so many people, it's like we've all done this. You get started, you get a little bit of traction, you start snowballing, right? And nothing is in place to automate or make your workload easier or talk with team members. You would not believe the amount of people that I talk to in e-commerce who are literally using like text message and Facebook Messenger to communicate with their team. They have no project management software. Like it's just fly by the seat of your pants because at one point it was just you. And the next thing you know, you got 15 people working for you and you don't have any systems set up. And I think really the key to successfully scaling is to create those systems and processes to get work done. And everybody, I went to 4 YouTube sessions and every single one of them said the exact same thing. They have a system and a process to do YouTube.
So what are Clifton's systems? I must know.
Well, he uses ClickUp, which is a project okay. management software. But yep. there's obviously Asana, Trello, things like that. That was the big one. It was basically, you know, getting those systems set up so that even if you're the only one in your business, right, having checklists, processes for like when I write a blog post, these are the 5 things that I need to do or 10 things that I need to do. And that way you're basically systematizing everything. And also when you grow and someone else comes in, how many times do people hire people and then don't have time to train them, right? Or don't have time to give them the proper instructions. So starting in the beginning when things aren't as hectic is actually really valuable to your business.
You know, it's funny. I hear people talk about Asana and ClickUp all the time. I haven't heard Trello in a long time.
People like Trello that are visual, I think that are visual learners.
Okay.
I was using
Trello for a while. The reason I stopped was because it was always a pain in the butt for me to just have that app open or installed wherever I was.
Yeah. I also think you need to use a system like Slack, right? Or another communication system so that you can, if I was getting texts of what I needed to do, that would be horrible because I would never, my texts would just disappear, right? Because my kids are now texting me 20 times after that and I'll never see it. So I think, you know, some sort of communication system as well is important for your business if you have other people working with you.
So what communication works well for you?
Oh, email. Email is
number one. Hypothetically speaking. Okay. All right.
Email.
Okay.
Like text is fine if it's an emergency, right? Like, hey, can you quick check this? Or, oh, this is broken. Like a lot of people use Voxer, right? Because you can do groups in Voxer. It just depends on what you like. But to me, email is the best for sure.
I can't imagine using Voxer. I know you were trying to sell me on it. But like I'm always in loud places if I'm at like a volleyball tournament. I can't even listen to these messages.
So you can listen to them with a headphone. But also with Voxer, you can type. When I'm out, I type everything into Voxer if I need to.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now on to YouTube, which I know you've been waiting for.
Yes.
Top tip that I got all weekend was bulk shoot your thumbnail photos. I thought this was absolutely genius. I think that most people think about their thumbnail last, right? That was the other tip that I got from another session was you should do your thumbnail and your title first before you ever script or record. Thought that was a great tip because that's actually the way to get people to watch your video, right? So one of the guys said he spends 70% of his time on the thumbnail and title and 30% on scripting and videoing. Another thing that I thought was great is that Tae Kim, he's one of the Financial Tortoise. He was one of the talks. You would have liked his talk because he thinks like you. So he was like, I wear the same shirt. I use the same background. I tried to mix it up at some point and nobody cares, right? He's talking about index stocks or something like that. I didn't even know what his topic was. I was like, I don't even know what that is. But he's got 127,000 subscribers. So clearly people are paying attention. But he's like, I tried different backgrounds and he's like, nobody cares. They just want the information. So, you know, he has a setup like you do. It never changes. It's all pre-set up. So he doesn't have to like go in and fiddle with things when he wants to record. Every single person that I listen to bulk scripts and bulk records. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. And they were like, that's the only way I can do it. Like if I don't bulk script, and they basically, most of people spend, so Tay said, he spends more time on his script than he does recording. He's like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Because the recording takes like 10 minutes.
Right. He does a word for word script. He's like, even if I don't follow it word for word, the information, having it right in front of me, you know, is the most valuable part. And that's, you know, once you get people to click, you want them to stay and watch. So scripting is really, really important. And I believe that most people should script. Right. If you're giving information now, you know, we have friends that do like recipes and home and garden. Like it's kind of hard to script that because you're doing things. You're not like staring directly at the camera, but any type of content, I feel like where you and the camera are like eye to eye, you should probably fully script your videos.
Yeah, I 100% agree, just for your sanity.
Yeah.
I've never bulk written scripts or bulk filmed anything.
Yeah.
Because I'm exhausted, actually. My voice starts cracking after like 15 minutes and I need to take a break.
You're so delicate.
Well, I know. And I can't script, like scripting requires brain power.
Yes. So most people script on one day, record on a different day.
No, but the batch scripting.
Yeah.
I don't think I could write like three scripts back to back, actually.
Yeah. I mean, the recording,
that's 6,000 words.
Yeah. The bulk recording to me seemed easier. So that was, I thought was interesting, is all of them do everything in bulk, which to me, it's like, well, that just builds consistency, right? Like,
correct.
If you just say Tuesday is my filming day, then, you know, you get up, you do your hair, you fix your makeup. You don't, but like, you know, you get your setup's probably mostly set up, but you get it all finalized. Your teleprompter's there, like everything's ready to go. So I think the bulk is a key to success for people. The other thing that I thought was interesting is all of them basically have a running list of about 50 to 100 topics.
Yeah.
Right. So they, you know, have a notebook by their bed. Tay had a really in-depth spreadsheet where he, you know, puts everything and then basically tracks it if he actually videos it. Cause he's like, you know, of these 50 to 100 ideas, maybe 10 of them are actually worth making a video about. Right. So you want to be like writing down all your ideas all the time. Cause I think many of us have ideas and then they just disappear. Right. Because we don't put them on paper or put them in a Google draft email, whatever it is.
Yes. I have a Google doc that, I don't know what, how many did you say they had? Like 100?
50 to 100 ideas. Yeah.
I don't think I have, I think I probably have like 30. I don't do batch recording, but what I do is I have like 5 videos in storage.
Yeah.
So I don't have to stress about it from week to week, which maybe is the same thing, just a little different.
Another tip that I got was always have your text on the left for your thumbnail.
Always have the text on the left. Oh, okay. I do that by accident, I guess. Explain. It's because we read from left to right?
Yep.
Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the other thing is make sure that the image you use doesn't cover up the, you know, at the bottom it says how many minutes the video is?
Yeah.
So make sure that your image doesn't like obscure that. Because if it's like the same color, it'll like blur. It won't work. You got to make sure that there's like space there for that. So that the time of the video, because the time of the video people actually look at, to like make a decision if they're going to watch it. Because if it's like, you know, 5 ways to change your stock portfolio and it's a 90 second video, it's probably not going to be a good video.
But on the flip side, maybe you should hide that and make it like all white in that corner so people can't tell how long it is.
I don't know. The tip that we got was to make sure that that's visible.
Okay.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. Another interesting tip was basically it's not about the algorithm. It's about your audience. If you make a video that flops, it's not the algorithm's fault. It's that you made the wrong video for your audience. So don't blame YouTube's. Their algorithm's great. So your people just aren't interested in that, right? And you don't want to have to find a new algorithm, right? You want to make the videos that intersect between your audience and what you're good at, right? So you find that middle point and those are the types of videos you keep making.
Here's something that I was cautioned against in one of my mastermind groups. Like oftentimes you're looking for topics that people want to watch, right? To build your audience. But let's say you have a topic that you typically don't talk about, that's somewhat unrelated to what you typically talk about. And then that video takes off and you attract all these subscribers that like that type of video. And for some reason that they eventually become a significant portion of your subscriber audience.
Right.
That might actually hurt your channel actually.
Yeah.
If you stop producing that type of content. So I've actually stopped veering away from like the core.
Yeah.
Even though I know certain topics are going to kill it.
Yeah. Well, that was another tip that we got was don't pick a niche, pick an angle. So kind of like what you're saying is, you know, you stuck with what you want to talk about. Like maybe your angle is I only pay cash, right? Like my angle is cash only, just talking because we were in a financial conference. So that, you know, makes tracks with that. But like, so all of your videos revolve around like how to save money on groceries and it relates to paying with cash, right? Or how to pay with cash to get money to do this like high yield account, right? But the angle that you come in with is the cash only angle, or the work 20 hours a week angle. Or I met a guy who his whole business is teaching W-2 people to build wealth, right? It's not about being an entrepreneur. Right. It's about building wealth as a W-2 person. And you can absolutely do that. So finding that angle versus finding the niche is actually really helpful in creating the content.
Did you go to Rob Berger's session?
I did not. I went to the email session, but Liz went to it and she said it was amazing. And she basically said he breaks every rule of YouTube. His editing is chopping off the beginning, chopping off the end.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I like that method, but he's also like so authoritative. And Liz was like, he's actually really funny.
He is hilarious. Yeah. Yeah. He's a funny guy.
Yeah. So he's like the bucking the system of YouTube, but that just shows you that like he picked an angle, right? That's his angle and it works.
I mean, he's in my mastermind group, so we make fun of him all the time, but because he's this guy, he looks very distinguished.
Mm-hmm. Very
He's got a beard, white hair, speaks very authoritatively, very intelligent, but he's kind of a goofball.
Yeah.
You know, hanging out with the guys and stuff. But here he goes on YouTube, literally just flips on the camera.
Yep.
And starts talking, and his channel is killing it.
Yeah. Which I think isn't, you know, another tip that, I mean, no one outright said this at FinCon, but like, you've got to be yourself, right? You have to talk about the things that you like to talk about and know about. I think that's really important because you come across as way more authentic when you do it that way.
Yeah, it just goes to show that all these tips and tactics, sometimes they don't matter.
Yes.
As long as the content is good. Like, I remember we were in the mastermind and we were looking at his thumbnails. Before, there was no text on them. It was just he just chose a random frame.
Yeah.
Or no. I think he just chose the default frame that YouTube automatically picks.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, you could probably boost your views by like 30% if just with like one line of text. And we had to convince him to do that.
Yeah.
And then he did it, and it made a difference. Still not great, but.
Yeah, I would say that like while he has had success doing this, I probably wouldn't say that this is how you should get started on YouTube. However, if it's the only way that you will get started, then do it that way. The last tip that I'll share before we run out of time, and this kind of goes back to the processes and systems, is that Financial Tortoise Tay, he keeps a folder of B-roll. That he's collected over, you know, the past year and a half. And I think that for like when you're still doing your own editing before you can afford to hire a video editor, having like the folder of B-roll, the folder of, you know, folder of headshots, the folder of all this stuff is actually really, really valuable in editing because most people get hung up on one part of it, right? And then they film all these videos and they can't put them out because they're not done. And so having these like an actual bucket where you just pull in those, you know, it's like you open up your folder and you've got like, oh, here's 100 B-roll shots, right, that I can use. I think that's really valuable in actually getting your video out and published.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think, my editor gets the B-roll from Pixabay, and then I uploaded like a whole folder of like a whole bunch of family shots and stuff.
Yeah.
That she kind of uses as B-roll because if you zoom the pictures in and out or pan, it's kind of like a little short clip.
But most people that aren't using an editor are like that B-roll just is floating around on their computer in 17 different folders and like, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
So like that, but if you think about like you have a folder and you don't have to search for anything outside of inside that folder, that's going to save you an hour, if not more, on a video edit.
Did you stay for the closing keynotes?
No, I had a flight.
Okay. So what was your favorite keynote?
Well, obviously yours.
Excellent.
Actually, let's talk about that for a second. I thought you gave an awesome presentation. I will say that
But you've seen it before, so I could see you in the audience. I did look over. I saw where you were.
Saw
I was like,
me,
okay, he's eye rolling now.
Verbatim. Like,
yeah, you're like mouthing the words.
When my wife and I got married, she knew she was going to cry. And she didn't want to ruin the makeup that she had spent all that money on. Like, I can do your speech word for word. and I said, woman, you are going to work 40 hours a week. I will say this about you, and this is the only compliment you're going to get from me this week. Your presence on stage has improved drastically over the years. Like, I mean, I've known you basically as long as you've been giving presentations.
And correct.
You've gotten, you were never bad. You were always solid. You've gotten a lot better. It was interesting because that I was actually talking to the two MCs after the after that whole session.
Glenn and
Erica, I think. Who did an amazing job. Great energy. They were like, that was a tough crowd. And it was a tough crowd. They weren't super into Glenn and Erica, but you had them like laughing and engaged and nodding and like raising their hands and all that stuff. So credit to you for giving a very like energetic talk and keeping it moving. You know, your slides went quickly, things like that. So you did a great job.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we're recording this.
Yes. So I'll have to listen to this played back every time I get mad at you. You're like, remember when you said I had a good talk? No, I thought it was great. And I thought it was really appropriate. This is probably the only negative I have is that like, then Paula gave her talk and then they did a live podcast recording about like how to be a billionaire or something like that. And I just felt like that was super impractical for that group of people. Most of the people in that audience are still trying to quit their day job. And I felt like you gave them hope about like how you could do that, how you can work on the side and how you can build that and not sacrifice your family. And I thought the $1 billion one was like, well, how do I get to $50 billion? I'm like, dude, these people are trying to make an extra $2,000 a month. They don't care about $50 million. Like, that's silly. So I did think that one was a little bit out of touch with the group. And I think that's probably why your talk was so well received, because it was the right group of people to hear that talk. And then you signed books and there was a line out the door for 2 hours. And that had to have been pretty fun.
That was a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. My hand hurt, but
face hurt from smiling.
But I tried to, it's funny, like the first 10 books, I asked questions and then I wrote like something long, but mm-hmm. And by long, I mean like 3 to 5 sentences.
Yeah.
Then I looked at the line. I'm like, best of luck.
Yeah.
Best of luck on your business.
So, but I do think that was the right crowd for your book. Right. Like those are,
I think
people,
so too, actually.
Yeah. Those are people that for the most part, I mean, obviously we have a group of friends there that have been doing this for a really long time, but over half the people at FinCon, it was their first time attending. And so a lot of these people are still working a 9 to 5 and they don't want to be, right. Or they want more balance in their life. And so I think that your talk actually was very applicable to that group of people because of the things that you talk about. And I think there's so much of this, you know, hustle, hustle, hustle. And like when they were doing that recording about trying to get to 50 million, I was thinking about what you said. You're like, I don't need that much. Like I make enough money to live. Like, why would I want to kill myself to make more when I make enough? And I think that that was like such a, like a difference, right? From the other talk, right? It was like, how do we get to 50? And you're like, I've got plenty of money. Like, why am I killing myself and my marriage and my family and the things that are important to me to get to a number that I can never spend?
Yeah. I mean, at least that's how I think. I think most people just want freedom.
Yeah.
Right. I think the people who are making 50 million, they probably didn't plan on making that much.
Right.
And then they just got carried away because it's really easy to do so. Right.
Yeah. And I think there's something to be said about, you know, how much is enough and how much is not worth the sacrifice. Right.
Since we're on this topic, Tony, what's your number?
Oh my gosh, we always do this, right?
But not publicly. What's your number?
What's my number to what? Quit?
Just to stop doing.
I don't think I would ever stop doing stuff. That's the problem.
Okay.
So I'm really safe. Like stuff.
Excellent.
But yeah, you're safe. You're safe. Because we talk about this a lot, right? I don't think I have a number. I think maybe would I drop certain things that I don't love? Yeah, sure. But I don't think I could ever just retire and not do anything.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I couldn't either.
Yeah. Like we were joking a couple weeks ago about, so apparently my house is worth as much as a castle in the south of France, right? I could sell my house and buy a castle.
Nice.
So I was like, oh, yes, that's the new business plan. Let's buy a castle and renovate it and then like Airbnb it, right? I mean, who doesn't want to stay in a castle? And it's not like a big outlay because my house is worth the same amount of money. So it was kind of like this whole big thing. But in my mind, I'm thinking like, I'll never not be wanting to do stuff like this, right? Wanting to like figure out some fun entrepreneurial thing to do. I just think that's how I'm built. And you know, even if I had enough money to never work again, I probably would still find things to do to earn money. It just wouldn't, I wouldn't have the same level of pressure, which would be nice.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.